Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
The fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had a cheat.
Well, he overheated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Hello and welcome to the Football Family, the 42's dedicated football podcast. We're coming to you on this Wednesday for a couple of different reasons. For one, Gav Cooney is about to set off on his travels to France today ahead of Ireland's Euro 2025 qualifier in Metz on Friday, while Shane Keegan and the rest of his Spurs-loving crew in his WhatsApp group have all raided our credit union accounts following the news that the club are seeking investment. I'm your host, David Snaid, back from a holiday that was short-lived and had to be cut short, but the long, long search for someone to be manager of the senior men's Republic of Ireland team continues. We reported over the weekend that Gus Poyet had rejected an offer to become Stephen Kenny's permanent successor, while we were later informed that while talks had broken down over issues relating to his backroom team, the Uruguayan is still keen to take the job should talks reopen with the FAI and a compromise be found. All this was happening in between the Good Friday and Easter Monday doubleheader of fixtures in the League of Ireland, which ultimately saw a virus-ridden Shelbourne extend their lead at the top of the Premier Division to 8 points. Although perhaps ominously, Shamrock Rovers now join Derry City and Sligo Rovers in the chasing pack, bunched on 12 points, and they will be hoping to make it 4 wins on the bounce when they travel to St. Pat's on Friday, themselves buoyed by Monday's much-needed 3-0 win over Sligo. Dundalk remain winless at the bottom, while Alan Reynolds began life as Bowes manager with defeat to Rovers and a strong win away to Galway ahead of Waterford's visit to Dalymount Park in a couple of days' time. As I said, Gav, you're going to be in Metz on Friday when Ireland obviously face France, the third ranked team in the world, and we'll assess the importance of that game, as well as England coming to the Aviva Stadium on Tuesday for Eileen Gleeson, and an indication of how far Ireland will come in their own ambitions to challenge the elite. But once again, there really is only one place to start.
He's gone at him! He has a man to his left! He finds a man!
No, obviously that was just a joke. I am still clinging to that because it's...
Let it go.
Listen, no, I won't.
Have we not moved on to some form of synopsis of their horrendous performance against Brentford by now, no?
Was that not just par for the course about what Manchester United are?
Like 30 shots from Brentford, like. These are historic numbers. We've never seen anything like this before.
One goal, was it?
So you watch that one. Watch that one from between your fingers. I'd imagine, David. Did you?
I did. What you call it? It was genuinely a horrific performance. But then, like after a while, you're thinking probably this is what you expect. You know what I mean? It's not as if you're thinking, oh, this is a shock. Can't believe this is happening. Like at no point are we thinking, Jesus, I didn't quite see this coming. Who would have thought this absolute shower could still be a shower of shite?
Results are all that matter, isn't that it?
Well, in fairness, it was actually a fine way to cap off my brutal week, because as I said, I cut my holiday in Portugal short because the weather was absolutely brutal. Pissing rain.
That is so bad. I'm so sorry to hear that. Jeez.
I know. It's okay. Pissing rain. Overcast. We managed to get a four. We were lucky that the little hotel we were staying in did have an indoor pool, but because it was so bad, it was only a small one that was part of the gym, but like they were basically limiting guests to 40-minute slots that you had to book. So we were getting in at 9 o'clock every morning. Then after that, what do you do? Like, it was just me and my wife. We could have just went to the pub. When you have two kids,
what do you do? We just booked an earlier flight home.
Literally managed to get flights with an unnamed carrier back from far out to Dublin one way, and I was like, do you know what? It's worth it. Cut our losses. Just like, take the hit while we still have a few bob of spends. No point in wasting money, and then we'll try and get away at some point. By which point, there might be a senior men's manager somewhere. You would like, because it was funny. I had this conversation with Gav. The guy was coming back in the airport in Farrow, literally 2 sips into a super box to console myself with how things had gone. And I get a message from someone saying, yeah, Gus Poyet's being offered the Ireland job. And I'm like, nah, what's going on here? And then had a bit of a back and forth, literally in Farrow Airport, had a bit of a back and forth walking around. And it was like, oh, dude, this is, I'm going to have to try and stand this up. And I didn't run it then and there and then. Took a couple of days to firm it up. And then by that point, he'd rejected it. Then I get more of the details. It's just been, I don't know, it's just been a bit of a strange week, hasn't it? I don't, considering he wasn't even one of the original people they spoke to for the job. And now he's the one who's turning it down.
Well, our old friend, the existing contractual obligations, this is why when Mark Canham sat beside John O'Shea, when O'Shea was announced as the interim appointment, and Canham soothingly told the country that the candidate will be announced in early April, can't be announced earlier than that, then because of their existing contractual obligations. I think we all were led to believe from that phrase that they have their guy, but for whatever reason, for whatever contract they're under, they can't be announced until early April. But now it sounds like the existing contractual obligations were less a fact and more of an assumption that, well, look, sure, whoever we appoint surely is under contract somewhere at the moment. So it does appear, and look, we will eventually hear the full story of this bizarre and elongated and now historically long search. But it does appear that the plan was to appoint the loser of Sanyal and Poyet under the assumption that one of them would not be going to the Euros, given that they were in the same path, and ultimately Sanyal's Georgia beat Poyet's Greece on penalties in Tbilisi. That looks to be the case. The FAI can come out and tell us something differently, but until they've done that, I think we're all working under the assumption that that's it. So it seems like it may be Poyet. Now kind of feels like it'll be John O'Shea if they can't get Poyet over the line. I mean, where, so David, you, in fairness, you've been doing all the work on this. I mean, where are we as it's, so Wednesday morning, where are we now with Poyet? Is it, it's still alive, is it?
Well, my heart is still in Alba Ferde, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie at all. I wish I was still there. Yeah, like literally, what was it Easter Monday? So Easter Monday, I was put in touch with people and they were telling me that, he had torn it down and rejected because basically he wanted to bring in, I think it was four backroom staff, coaching staff with him, and that the preferred four that he wanted, he wasn't able to get. So that kind of, he kind of stepped away from it. And at that point, that this would have been over the weekend, because obviously those Greek reports then at that point as well. But that's what I was being told, that it was obviously regarding backroom staff. Not so much that he was getting people forced on him, but just that he wasn't able to bring in people that he wanted. Now, I should also stress, what I was told is that I don't think John O'Shea was one of those people who was being forced on him. But that wasn't the name that was put to me, and I haven't been able to 100% put it, obviously confirm that either, but it wasn't said, oh, well, he didn't want the job because maybe O'Shea was going to be coming in as an assistant and he'd already been interim. I don't think that is the case from what I've been told. And then it was just like, literally, yeah, then a couple of days later, well, actually, obviously, Poyet does still want the job, that there possibly could be some way of having a compromise, and it's just about whether or not the talks have reopened. At the moment now, what we now, 11:45 on the Wednesday, 3rd of April, I don't know if those talks have actually reopened yet. That's the truth. I was reading in the Irish Examiner, was it, that Canham has been in Donegal for the last couple of days, I think it was, that part of the football pathways plan and stuff like that, which again is still happening in the background. Very, very important matters.
We have a leash on this Monday, actually. I wonder, will he appear at that? He hardly will he?
Well, is there one?
We've a pathways consultation this Monday. Well,
I remember you complaining on this pod that you didn't have one, that the Midlands were being neglected. So obviously, well, they're listening, you know?
Now, I saw a few names mentioned to be added. I didn't see his name mentioned, though, to be honest, no, so I didn't. But
I thought when I heard Donegal, I hadn't seen that report, I thought maybe Cannon was going for some kind of primal scream therapy, like John Lennon did back in the day, you know, just to get this out of my head. You know, I need to do something here.
But it is bizarre. Like, it is, like, even getting messages from people. Like, again, like I put it out on social media about, just obviously after I put the story up on the 42, and I was literally getting messages, worryingly, from people within the FAI asking me, is this a fucking April Fool's? What the fuck is going on?
That's incredible.
So that's the stage we're at there now. I know it is a lot, but like, that's the stage now we're at where people are thinking, what is going on here? Do you know? So like, I just think, at this point now, and Gav, I'll tell you, Shane, like, you'll know as well from obviously being around the league, this isn't a case that the FAI are briefing X, Y, and Z genuinely, it's very being very quiet. And fair play, maybe that's how Canham has wanted it, but it's kind of led to the point now where you're thinking, is that happening because he hasn't got an actual plan that he can stand behind to put in place a standover to speak about? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, he's put out that it was put out about having the appointment sorted in early April, but it just seems as that's a bit wishy-washy now at this stage. I saw it as well in the Irish Times. Was it Gav Cummins reported that they're looking at April the 12th because they want to have the women's games finished and not to kind of overshadow. But Jamie Mack, like, I think if you have your manager, you announce them, you get it all sorted, get it all around, show that you're on the ball here, you know what I mean?
I love all the terminology you're using here. It's all very, all very safe, journalistic, maybe we were led to believe, maybe they meant this and maybe they meant that, and now it's a little bit wishy-washy. Like, can we not cut to the chase here? At what point are we going to say that we were all just lied to? We were all just lied to. Like, that's what happened. The FAI lied and told us they had a deal done to appoint the manager in April, and it appears that they absolutely didn't, and they now they don't know where they stand, no more than any of the rest of us don't know where they stand.
Yeah. What I would say, like, lie is obviously a big word. What I will say is that, you know, when Mark Canham says existing will announce the new manager in early April, existing contractual obligations, we're not in a position to do that then. I suppose there's enough room for manoeuvre there to say that, you know, because I did follow up after Canham had said that. My first question to him was, are you saying that you've got a guy, you've got his name signed and sealed and delivered, and you just can't announce it there? And I listened back to the tape the other day, and he didn't say that. He just repeated what he said.
Yeah.
So, look, maybe when he's defending himself, he'll say there's enough wriggle room within that. But, you know, when he says that phrase, existing contractual obligations, I think it's fair to assume, and no one has come out and told journalists or the public anything different than the fact that we've got someone. And there's been ample time over the past few weeks for the FAI to come out and say, well, we actually don't, you know, just to let you know, we don't actually have this guy yet, but we will, you know. But so I think it's a fair impression for people to get. I think it'd be two separate things. I think Canham can sit there and say he wasn't lying to the public, while at the same time the public can be under the impression that they must have a person. Because, I mean, that was the impression I had. And now I'm beginning to think I was slightly wrong in the uptake. But then again, you know, no one exactly steered me away from that uptake.
But from a selfish point of view, I'll be honest, at times this has made me even look like an absolute sap. Well, I'll be honest with you, because I remember when this went...
Me too.
In terms of what we were reporting, because I'll be honest, like, sometimes we've held off on reporting certain things and even certain names of people who we now know have not been in the mix but have been approached or whatever, and that'll come to light, trust me. But, like, you kind of, at this point, you're kind of like, well, you know what, there's only so much... You see it even in replies and stuff, it's mad how people... And you have people think some of this works. But, like, I'll give you an example. So, like, after this was announced, and we remember we had this debate and we were having this conversation about, well, you know, who could it be in football? When could our contract be up, etc., etc.? I literally went to a coach at a prominent, really prominent club, went to the hassle of tracking down a number for this person, a number for someone who specifically deals with these kind of inquiries at the club, and was literally like, what the fuck are you bothering us about this for? This has nothing to do with us. But in my head, I'm thinking, because you're trying to deduct it and you're trying to get a sense of this person has to be in the mix because of maybe a bit of the profile and what the FAI had said they're looking for. And then they're probably thinking, who is this gobshite asking us about this? You know what I mean?
I was the exact same as you, David. I remember, I know we're sharing war stories now, the war isn't even fucking over, but...
That's why I shaved my head.
I remember trying to get onto the manager of Bodø Glimt in Norway. I remember being on the phone with some Norwegian agent because I got this, I read somewhere that, the Bodø Glimt manager is supposed to be leaving soon. He's brought in a manager as assistant. He's surely grooming him to be the successor. We're going to hire this hotshot manager of Bodø Glimt.
He is good. He is good. I've been following him a bit. You're getting me excited now.
The only way in which this anecdote is worse, it could be worse, the fact that if we do then appoint this manager of Bodø Glimt, I don't see it happening. My other war story is that I remember doing, I was doing off the ball around the Chris Coleman news with a Welsh journalist, live at 7:30 to 8:00. Welsh journalist dropped off at about quarter 10 to 8 just because we were moving on to discuss a couple of other Irish football things that he wasn't really across. I went off air at 5 to 8 before the 8 o'clock headlines. Quarter past 8 I read this journalist report on the BBC Sport website, Chris Coleman's out of the running. I'd been on radio 20 minutes earlier talking about how Coleman is a contender. Just like,
I'm just delighted that I can somewhat claim to have been ahead of the curve here based on the pure fact that I refused to believe what they were telling us. Whereas as journalists, you guys kind of had to take them at their word a little bit here. Whereas I never believed it for a minute. I honestly never believed it for a minute.
But I'll be honest, Shane, part of the reason why I took it at face value about having the manager in place is because, my God, considering how the search had already gone with Carsley and the back and forth and some of the other names, to be that definitive about having someone in terms of a, it's unprecedented in terms of a chase for a manager or how you would conduct the business of how it's being to have said that. They could have easily said, listen, and this is why I went back on it, and again, I've had this conversation with people, again, in the FAI, people willing to set up that, if they had just come out and said, you know what, we actually need to take a step back here and reassess things because where we're at is not where we anticipated to be and we just need to take a beat. If they had said that in the statement rather than coming out and saying we have someone lined up, I think people would have been a lot more appreciative of rather than coming out.
Or even, as you've said, the definitive thing is it. Like, I think I asked the question of you at the time was, why make this statement? What was the upside of being as definitive as they were? I couldn't understand it at the time. Why would you not? I genuinely can't understand. Why would you not just say, we have two or three preferred candidates who are currently in roles. We need their contracts to finish up before we can see if we can fully nail down one of those preferred candidates. And that's the timeline we're going to work off of. What? Like, again, am I naive here? What? Why would you not say that?
I don't know. Part of it just seems to be how this is being communicated. Like what Gav says there about when he put it to Callum about have you got this lined up, and obviously it's kind of repeating not a PR phrase, but just a kind of stock phrase, rather than just being a bit more upfront about it. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of because it's just led to the sense that they haven't been able to actually have a proper focus of how this is going to be. Do you know what I mean? And let's be honest, you would like to think at some point the FAI here, or and bear in mind, we're saying Mark Hannum, obviously Jonathan Hill has been involved in this, Paddy Bonner has been involved in this, even I think recently hasn't the chairman, was it Paul Cook, I think maybe?
I think the president Paul Cook has been involved in it as well, yeah.
Like, they've been involved, so it's, now obviously Hannum is the one organising, he's the one whose remit this has been, but it's not just him, there's other people here now who are just... Because it's gonna get to the stage where whoever's announced, I don't know who it's gonna be. It's whittling down, like, you know what I mean. But what I'm saying is, it's taken away as well from some kind of sense of, I don't know, a kind of sense of feeling that, well, do you know what, there's something still at least happening with the senior team here, of a bit of a vision here, right? They decided to get rid of Stephen Kenny purely because of the basis of the results, which is fair enough. I don't think anybody could disagree with why that happened. But if it's been allowed to drag on and fester for this long, any kind of little bit of momentum that had been built up at all has kind of dissipated. Unless, of course, the new manager comes in and wins two games. Then, obviously, things change and all this is forgotten. Do you know what I mean? It just adds more pressure, I would feel. That's my own...
And I'm also starting to wonder at this stage, you know, the other people that you've spoken about that are part of this process, right? I'm actually genuinely starting to wonder now at this stage as well, when Mark Hannum came out with the comments that he came out with, were they comments that were universally agreed by everybody, or was there actually an element of some of the rest of the group going, holy shit, what's he saying here? Like, did they all agree that this was how they were going to portray it in the media, or... is it a little bit of a solo run? And I would be surprised if there wasn't one or two of them grimacing with the definitiveness of the way it was put out there. Like, they had to know, okay, we think we know who we want, we're hopeful we can get them, but that's absolutely not what you would pick up from what was said at the time. Absolutely not what you would pick up.
It definitely won't be Lee Carr, you know.
Yeah, there is some clarity at last. They've also said it's definitely not John O'Shea, so I look forward to John O'Shea's second unveiling this time.
But the mad thing is, this is the thing. The two people whose names now are most closely linked to this and have most chance of getting it, you would imagine, now bear in mind, we don't know what's going to happen with Willie Sanyon. He's obviously, you would think he's going to be going to the Euros with George. I don't know what's going to happen there. But two of the people weren't even interviewed for this job originally. So John O'Shea, who's now interim, and by all accounts, obviously Mark Cannon was in with the actual squad for the few days over the last camp and stuff. And obviously we've heard, who was it, Nathan Collins and Dara O'Shea, and different people talking very positively about John O'Shea. And that's the part of the reason being is he is an impressive guy, he's an impressive fella. But he's still a manager. He's hasn't even been a proper manager yet in terms of having a full-time job. He's been obviously a coach and has a good experience at championship level and obviously being in with the Irish setup, and there's promise there. But like, he wasn't even interviewed for the job. He wasn't even someone that the FAI had said, well, do you know what, we kind of want to have a chat with you anyway at the start of this. And same with Poyet. Now, obviously, part of that reason is Poyet was in the job, but even what was the preference for what the type of manager he wanted doesn't seem to fit with what Poyet is.
Yeah.
But here's another part of all that, lads, is a person that I feel quite sorry for at the moment in all of this is John O'Shea, right? Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you, if John O'Shea was 100% convinced that he could not be getting the job because it was a done deal for somebody else, which I think he probably was when Mark Cannon came out with the line, and then I think by the time the game started, he was in the same place as all the rest of us, which is, fuck, I actually do probably have a decent chance because they don't have somebody sorted here. But now that led to him speaking differently. I feel it led to him speaking differently around those games than he would have done previously. It also led the players to speaking differently about him after the game, and all of that, in my opinion, has now made it virtually impossible for him to be a number two to somebody else.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be so difficult for him to be a number two to somebody else. A, because I don't know if he'll be able to wrap his head around taking the back step, but nearly the bigger problem for me now is I think any potential manager like a Gus Poyet is going to be a little bit iffy about bringing in a number two who they feel it was maybe a little bit disgruntled that they didn't actually get the job themselves. So like he's kind of a pawn in all of this, and he's kind of, you know, he's suffering from the whole indecision and just bullshit as well.
And to add to that, Shane, if he ends up getting the job full time, I think he'll not do it, but part of him will want to turn around to the FAI and say, why didn't you just appoint me permanently for the two friendlies? Because he said himself he would have approached them differently. Like, as interim manager, he obviously didn't have much incentive. His main incentive was to get results, so it wasn't much of incentive for him to rotate the squad and keep everyone happy. But these guys he brought over for a long camp, like in two games at the busiest time of the club season, who didn't get a minute of action, like, you know, Ryan Manning, we saw the comments that Russell Martin was very unhappy that he didn't play, the likes of Obafemi. There's other guys there as well, like Jake O'Brien didn't play at all. Like, you know, if he knew he was permanent manager, he might have experimented more, and he would have used the extended squad more, I would imagine, than if he thought he was just there for an interim, which maybe sets up problems going forward that just didn't need to exist, but will be a consequence of this unbelievably long search.
In fairness, Russell Martin also, fair play, taking the title as the first manager in history to complain about one of his players not playing on international duty.
True.
Yeah. But I don't know, were you reading any of Duffer's comments, Shane, about, like, you know, he said it before before the Friday game, the Good Friday game against Dundalk, where he said about, you know, basically the League of Ireland now is the leading light of Irish football, and this is what it's about. And in fairness, I was at the match on Monday with Derdy, and he kind of elaborated a bit more. We were just talking about, you know, it's about academies, this is where the Irish football team is going. We've already spoken about this, that the next few years, basically every player in the squad is going to basically have come through a League of Ireland academy, and it makes perfect sense. And he did say, listen, if any players have been pissed off or felt like disrespecting them, they can get in touch and you can have that conversation with him, which I'm sure if the people saw it for over the last while, you probably steer clear, to be honest. Leave him be. Especially added with that current facial hair and the virus that has ripped through. So it's just give him a white beard, possibly. I would say.
Yeah, I don't think any of the comments were particularly new. It was just doubling down on stuff that he had said previously, and that he is right. Look, as you say, we've had exactly that discussion that we're heading into an era where pretty much every player who pulls on the senior jersey is going to have played in the League of Ireland, bar the handful maybe that will have gone across at 16 and jumped straight to Europe maybe. So no, look, I don't know what new there really was in Duffer's comments. As Duff comments go, they were reasonably bland and mild compared to what we're used to, I suppose, at this stage. But nonetheless on the money again.
But I also wonder, and look, people in the FAI might disagree with me, and please tell me if you do, but like, why is Damien Duff having to make the FAI's points for them around investment in academies? I mean, he's absolutely bang on. I mean, I hope the FAI realise the absolute gift they've been given in Damien Duff. I know he said disparaging things about the search for the new manager, but like, he's now making the case that the FAI are meant to be making for government investment in academies, you know? And, you know, I mean, where is this money coming from?
Well, they did have a chance to do it. They did have a chance to.
Yeah, but like, the FAI, there's other channels from which the FAI can make this. Are they making them? I mean, I'm not hugely aware that they are, and you know, like, clubs are now being asked to run academies that are becoming ever more expensive, and the FAI really, like, the amount of money that the FAI are able to contribute to that really is minimal in the broad scheme of things. So obviously it needs state investment, and like, we've got Duff out there making the case, which is great in one way, but like, you just hope that it's accompanied by the FAI knocking on doors and pressing the flesh with government in a material way as well. And it's just, it underlines, I know people get sick of us talking about Damien Duff's Shelburne. In many ways, it's Damien Duff's League of Ireland at the moment. Like, he is obviously driving it from a media point of view and drawing a kind of an almost unprecedented level of attention to it. But what a gift it is for Irish football that he's not doing it. He's obviously got Shell's best interests at heart, but he's not doing it. He's not using his platform to play mind games or be divisive in any way. He's articulating what's best for Shelburne, but he's also articulating what's best for Irish football. I think that's a really quite unique thing that we should be very glad we have.
And listen, not to jump too much back to our previous conversation, but like, when you mentioned the investment and Duffer putting forward such a good case for it, you know, better than anybody in the FAI, like, is there any element here, or is there any worry here that the shit show around the whole manager situation makes people in government think, like, do these people know what they're doing? If we give them the money that they're asking for, yeah, are they actually clued in enough to be able to use it in the correct way? Like, is there any overlap there, or are they separate things?
I don't know. I think the Oireachtas stuff is worse there.
Yeah, I was going to say, what happened at the Oireachtas? Yeah, in fairness, well, Bertie was at Tolka Park. He could have saw someone to be next Ireland manager. But like, I know, obviously, it's mad already in terms of even with the league that we're coming approaching the fourth round of fixtures. I know some of them aren't, because obviously a couple of games were postponed because of like the weather. But like, Shells are motoring, Rovers look good in terms of could be four wins on the spin. But like, it's, I don't know. I know I was the one who was writing all this and predicted Shells would be there. He was in. That's fair enough. Like, we all have our crosses to bear, but.
At what point did you predict this? I'm trying to remember this now. You're going to have to jog my memory.
In fairness, it was pre-season.
Before a ball was kicked, you said they'd go well, did you?
Yeah. Yeah. I also said there'd be a manager in place for the season.
Can't get him all right, David. Can't get him all right.
Some players still had contractual obligations, so they weren't able to actually join. So
I thought that maybe I'm overreacting to it, and maybe Bowes were really poor. I thought that second half from Rovers was proper warning to the league stuff. I thought they were just, the attacks were coming from everywhere. There's so much, they have a lot more, it just feels like they have a lot more pace in the team now. Johnny Kenny looks a bit more physical and a little bit more of a rounded player. Obviously Josh Holohan is a serious addition there at left wing back. I saw Stephen Bradley liking him to Liam Scales, which is obviously a great comparison on a number of levels in terms of it's bang accurate, and if he's like Liam Scales, he's going to be a hell of a signing for Shamrock Rovers. Dara Burns is making a big impact, and I don't know, obviously I think the only question mark for Rovers really, I think there's a question mark at goalkeeper now, you know. I mean, the just a bizarre goal to concede against Bowes, and he wasn't great on the free kick at Waterford either, Leon Poles. So Maybe that's the concern.
Yeah. On your first point, Gav, around Josh Hanahan, right? I actually don't think that the Rovers set up, whether the main person be Bradley or somebody else, I don't think they get enough credit for how well they've done in terms of spotting talent over the last few years. Like, the talent goes on and, you know, fulfills the potential that Rovers saw in it, and then everybody thinks it was a no-brainer to have signed that player. But, like, at the time, there wasn't a clamour of clubs looking to sign Josh Hanahan. I'm telling you, at the time, there wasn't a clamour of clubs looking to sign Liam Scales, even though Liam was doing reasonably well. I wouldn't say there was a clamour of clubs absolutely banging down to sign him. And I know from my own time that there, you know, like, it would very Lee Grace would very easily have stayed floating under the radar for what he was doing with us at Galway. You know, we didn't have a load of offers. We had one offer from one club. And you would have to put it at Stephen Bradley, you would imagine, primarily as being the person who is identifying those targets. They've done very, very well in that front. Very, very well in that front. Like, watching Josh Hanahan the other night, I thought he was excellent. And as I say, I don't know if you told me, you know, if you told me to pick a potential rising star out of last season's Cork City team, I don't think I would have picked him. I'd be pretty sure I wouldn't have picked him. But they obviously saw something a bit more in him, and I thought he was excellent. And look, it's amazing because shells aside at the moment, and I suppose the rest are hoping that they come back to the pack and that they can't maintain the current form throughout the whole season. But because everybody is beating everybody, when you've got a three-day turnaround like that and one team picks up 6 points out of six, because of the 10 teams in the division, there was only one team that picked up 6 points out of six, you do absolutely shoot up the table. And you become a very, very different proposition in the space of 4 days, which is what they did, you know. Look, I think it's nearly bang on 12 months since Rovers got off to a slow start. Manchester City were stumbling in the Premier, and you could get 3-1 on the two of them winning the league title. Before the weekend, you could get 3-1 on the two of them winning the league titles again this year, and I just think it's no-brainer stuff.
Yeah, well, City have a league too, so I got something.
Just very quickly on your point, Shane, I think it's a really good one, and it's probably made a little bit easier in terms of identifying talent that Rovers have such clear principles and a system of play. Like, I guess that makes it a little bit easier. I'd love to know what Stephen Bradley thinks of how Ireland play their back three. Because, I mean, I've been on... Yeah. I know we had a chat on this last week, how much I hate Ireland's back three, because the three centre-backs in Ireland's system just seems to be so close together and end up just kind of passing the ball between them to absolutely no effect. Whereas Rovers and build-up put their... Like, their three centre-backs are pretty stretched across the pitch, you know? And obviously the wing-backs are primarily attacking outlets now rather than for Ireland or defensively. And it just goes to show that they've played that system for years now, you know, since, 2019, I think. So I'd love to hear what Stephen Bradley thinks of how Ireland plays.
Yeah, and look, yeah, very good point. I would say the only caveat on the talent ID thing there is that Josh Hanahan stood out in a position that they absolutely didn't sign him to play. There was no way the intention when they signed Josh Hanahan was for him to end up as the left wing back. And I suppose the interesting thing there is the last time Shamrock Rovers were stuck for a left wing back, they decided to shove Andy Lyons over there, and would that work out extremely well? You know, if this one works out as well as that, it'll be have been another absolute masterstroke, really. So it will. But again, it's probably you don't like drawing attention to managers or that are struggling or stuff like that. But it's probably the teams that are struggling that are nearly of more interest than the ones that aren't. I think over the course of the 4 days on social media, I'd say Duffer and Stephen Bradley might have been near enough the only two of the 10 managers in the Premier Division who their managers weren't potentially. Well, Kev Doherty, I'd say, you could safely throw into that as well. But, like, you know, you've got so many clubs that aren't where they would want to be or that kind of thing. Obviously, Deck was the first one to pay with his job, but there's a lot more of him under pressure, and all it takes again is, you know, two results and you're the darling, two results going the opposite direction and people are calling for the chop with you. It's that topsy-turvy at the moment, you know.
But Dundalk need a result quick. Big longer, time. The longer that goes, you know what I mean?
Big time. And look, by all accounts, it wasn't just a poor result on Monday morning. It was it was a poor performance. It was a poor performance. I think Drogheda had kind of all the, on all the metrics, Drogheda had come out on top, shots and attempts and XG and all of that kind of crack. So they did, which is not where Dundalk would want to be at home to the side that you're pretty much banking on being the one that you're going to haul in and go past and at least get into a relegation playoff spot rather than an automatic relegation one. To be, by all accounts, significantly second best in that game is, I think it's the most worrying sign yet for them, you know?
Really, yeah?
Yeah, look, it's just, as I say, that's, to me, if I'm Dundalk, if I'm Stevie at the moment, you're saying, right, you know, we have enough about us lads here to definitely be able to haul in, to definitely be able to haul in a Drogheda. You know, we've more quality, or we've more this, or more that. And then, you know, if you've said those words or kind of had those thoughts even internally, and then you go out and you're well second best to that team, well, who are you going to haul in if that's not the one you're hauling in?
No, it's a good point, isn't it? Like, you know, we've kind of said it about the competitiveness of the league, but if you look at even Sligo, to a degree, I know they got beaten, but like, no one, even me, no one anticipated Sligo to be, even me,
even you,
no one anticipated Sligo being second, just kind of goes to show.
And yet I certainly wouldn't say with absolute certainty that they won't end up in relegation fight.
Well, it's similar to last season in the sense that they started, they had a relatively strong start, didn't they? Because obviously as well, like, oh my God, the striker.
Max Mata.
Yeah, Max Mata. Similarly, he had a relatively good start to last season as well. Gets his move. He's now back on loan, but he's going to be gone in the summer. Now, they've got different, maybe you'll have different strengths, and possibly as well with John Russell, it could be a sense of even, you would imagine, because obviously he's a good fella as well, like, of learning more about the league and setting things up and all the rest of it. I say learning more about the league, he's obviously so experienced as a player, but I mean more so as a manager and as a coach, I suppose. But like, you would think, I know what you mean, like, maybe you're not certain, but you would think that if he has had those, talking about phrases and all wishy-washy stuff, learnings from last year, that maybe Sligo will be stronger. Do you know what I mean? And maybe won't have the same maybe slump that they possibly had last year.
I got down to St. Coleman's Park myself on Monday, so I did. Brand new unveiling of their brand new Astro.
Oh, the pitch. Yeah, pitch.
Geez, they did a great crowd in, actually. It was mental. I left Laois and it was lashing rain. I got back to Laois and it was lashing rain. Sun was absolutely splitting the skies down in Cove. It was a gorgeous day down there. But yeah, real kind of festival atmosphere down there with their first home game of the season, like, to be this far into the season and only having your first home game. But that, look, I know we won't spend too much time on it, but that division is equally mental. It's Cork probably having shot way clear in the manner that some would have expected, and then you've got like Bray or third last, and you know, Ian Ryan under pressure, and people, you know, put Colin saying, is he doing well enough? He's 3 points off the playoffs. So he is. So again, it's absolutely mental. It's going to be extremely, extremely tight down in that division as well.
Were they laying palms at your feet as you walked back into Cove?
No, definitely not. I got a couple of requests for a few selfies and that kind of crack from a couple of the younger ones, but no, I'd say most of the adults hardly even notice my existence, as should be the case.
People move on in football, don't they, Shane?
That's it. That's Chris Lyons, actually. There's one for you.
Did you
hear? Yeah, half-time, because I was coming across to the dressing room at half-time just to meet up with some of the directors and that, just for a chat. I hadn't seen him since I left. And next thing, I just, because I know Chris a long time, just seen Chris darting past me, and I know Chris's dad as well. I was like, what is going on here? And it transpired, having chosen to miss Friday's game because it was his partner's due date, she didn't give her birth on Friday, and then, of course, typical women, he goes down to Cove, and she decides to have the baby while he's down in Cove. So he actually left at halftime. He had a really good first half. They were 1-0 up at halftime. It's a big reason they didn't win the game, I'd imagine, to be honest with you. And he had to dart off with his dad there at halftime to get back up as quickly as he could. So congratulations, Chris.
Do footballers get paternity leave? Or like in leave or not?
Ask Roy Keane.
Why?
I remember the Roy one. He didn't give birth himself, did he? Remember, who was the...
Sorry.
But I remember, it's always been a badge of pride for football, for some footballers, that they don't go. I remember Xabi Alonso missed a Liverpool Champions League tie back in the day. Was it against Inter Milan or someone? And I just remember John Giles criticising him on RTE, saying that he hadn't attended any of the births of his children. The implication being he was playing matches, but I don't think he actually added that bit.
Pretty sure my dad missed my birth to play in a Kilkenny District League match. I'm not sure if it's... have a little bit more respect for Xabi Alonso. It's an important one. Like.
Yeah. I tell you, the waves are throwing in my head here now. I'm just thinking of how to make the tournament into a feature. I'm not going to lie. Footballers and but Herney. Gav, you're about to head for the airport. You're on the way to Metz. Big old couple of days for Eileen Gleeson and the Republic of Ireland.
Big, yeah. This is normally Emma Duffy's beat, but Emma's away at a wedding. So, I mean, parachuted in as super sub. Really looking forward to it. First up, game against France and Metz on Friday, and then the big game against England in Dublin on Tuesday. Ireland have been given an absolutely shocking draw yet again. We've had a really bad run of draws. Another kind of draw. Obviously, Stephen Kenny's Ireland career Ireland manager pretty much ended at that Euro 2024 qualifier draw in Frankfurt. And this is a brutal draw. I mean, like, I think they're like the three top rated sides in terms of world ranking that Ireland could have gotten, they ended up getting, which is kind of crazy. So they obviously have the comfort of a playoff afterwards, so it's not quite do or die, but it's still important. And it is interesting, isn't it, that, you know, the blueprint for how Ireland will probably approach these games against France and England and Sweden is probably the Vera Powell blueprint. So it is kind of, we are kind of going back to the future. Like, I think it is kind of big for Eileen Gleeson because obviously FAI deemed her the right candidate, and, you know, obviously the Nations League went so well, but like Ireland were so superior to those opposition, and the friendly games, particularly that defeat to Wales a month ago, is, you know, that is a little bit concerning. And, you know, if results do start to go awry, I think, you know, question marks and lights will be shone on Eileen Gleeson's CV and compared to Vera Powell's CV and said, okay, well, the FAI did remove one quite highly successful and highly experienced manager for someone who is not that level of experience and not that level of success. Obviously, there are extenuating circumstances there, particularly around the squad's opinion. So, yeah, I think there'll be a little bit of pressure, maybe not even so much on Eileen Gleeson as much on the FAI around the recruitment of managers, which is very much in the spotlight, as we've been discussing already. But hopefully things don't get to that. But look, it's a massive challenge going away to France. Jesus, I mean, they were penalty shootout away from the semi-finals of the World Cup. Herve Renard is on his way out. He wants to take a team to the Men's World Cup in 2026. So presumably rules Ireland out. I'll go and I'll ask him the question and we can rule another candidate out. massive challenge for Ireland.
So based on what you've said there, Gav, so what do you feel, what results from these two games doesn't draw extra pressure on Eileen Gleeson?
Even if it's two defeats, even if they're narrow, I mean, like, they are, I don't know,
but it will be two defeats.
Yeah. Am I being too defeatist there? Maybe a draw at home to England or something would be a good result. But nah, you think
A draw at home to England would be a sensational result.
Yeah, I just remember, now look, a health warning about it being a pre-tournament friendly, but France were so much better than us prior to the World Cup last summer in Tala.
This feels like, what was the double header or the game we had when we were talking about Stephen Kenny and I was telling the 2E to cop on, or we had no hope in hell of winning the match?
Yeah. As Azerbaijan and Luxembourg, was it?
harsh. But no, the reality is we're going to lose both of these games, right? So, and we need to take that as the starting point.
I don't know, should we be assuming that? Like, I mean, we do have two world class players. We have been at a World Cup. We have put in the architecture, like a top class support structure around the players that they've asked for, and I know we're coming up against top quality opposition, but Jesus, like, why are we saying, I don't know if we should be approaching these games accepting that we'll lose before we've played them.
But sure, even if I agree with you, Gav, like, so we've got two players who would make the England starting 11, so we've got two as against their nine. How do you win a game when you've got two players of the quality of their other nine?
Yeah, but you know, the passion of the Aviva home crowd. You know? I mean, is there not any room for some kind of magical thing?
I'm going. I can't wait. I'm bringing my goddaughter. I'm going to be up there. I can't wait for the game. It'll be a brilliant. But like this crack of, we keep doing it. Like, we keep expecting to get results that are like, it would be a sensational result if we got a draw at home against United or against England. Sensational result.
My actual thing of it would be going into the games would be basically using not using the words, but going off what the players have been saying about feeling, well, if they put different structures, Gav's already kind of mentioned it in terms of how they prepare for games in place, that they can get more from them and be able to play a bit differently. So I'd be looking at it from the point of view of, I would be of the opinion, Shane, I don't think Ireland are good enough, no matter how they play, to beat France, especially away from home, or even England at home, no matter how they play. But if I think Gleeson has been able to kind of transform to a degree the positivity with which Ireland use the ball, that's because this is what the players have said. This is what,
and we did see a bit of it in the friendly against Italy. Like, I mean, I think we scored a goal that's definitely onside, you know.
These
we did
are
see
not
a bit
the
of
two
it.
Games to decide whether Eileen Gleeson has managed to transform the way the girls are able to play or not. They're not. They can't be, lads. We're not going to have the ball.
No, I mean when they use it, I'm not saying about dominating the ball, Shane. What I mean is that when they have it. So basically, what one of the issues that the players had previously was that they weren't kind of set up to actually even properly maybe counterattack. Do you know what I mean? Like in terms of it was just defend, and that was to a degree. Like, they weren't properly shown, from what I've been told and from what's already been said, about the thing you would know as a coach about certain triggers of when to press, when not to, when to actually just be sit deep and be compact and frustrate and then try and attack. That's what I'd be looking at if you were, and you'd be better at it than me.
Yeah, but that's going to be a pretty small part of the game. So the only difference we're going to be able to tell is whether we occasionally manage to counter-attack a little bit better than we did under Vera Pauw. That's a pretty small part of the game. Mm. Like, I just think we have to write these two games off.
But then you're writing the whole... Are you not writing the whole campaign off?
Yeah, in the same way we had to write the Stephen Kenny one off as soon as that draw
sure, this
was
is
made.
Years of our lives, Shane. We can't write.
This is
we
reality.
Can't write it all off.
There is no point. There is no point people coming down hard on Vera Pauw after two, or sorry, hard on Eileen Gleeson after two, you know, two defeats that could be, I don't know, 3-0
no,
and 2-0 or something
right,
like that.
I agree with that, but I don't think there has to be a difference between there's no point in slaughtering the manager after losing to a couple of the world's best teams. Fair game. But I also think it's a bit defeatist just beforehand, just to say.
It might be defeatist, but it's reality. That's who it was. Netherlands and France. He tried to tell me we were going to get results against Netherlands and France.
We thought it was.
He did.
No, we were.
No.
Ah, here.
Go back to the recording. You tried to tell me it was. We had a row over. You told me, Gavin, that Dumfries wasn't as good as I was making out. Yeah, I'm not being defeatist. Well, I'm dealing in reality. I'm trying to put myself in the manager's shoes.
I've had a take on this podcast coming back to the previous Euros that I'd have Matt Doherty over Denzel Dumfries. I have to apologise for that take. That was a garbage take. But
Kyle Walker, though. The only thing I would say, Shane, is, listen, it broke my heart to write off 3 days of a holiday. I can't do the same for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Look, it's extreme. The draw is extremely unfortunate. Extremely unfortunate. And I just...
The draw is a joke. Yeah. Like, how is it not better seeded? Yeah. Like, it's fucking Nations League. Like, you know, where maybe the Nations League will shake out into a proper meritocracy in the years to come. But we've been, in both men's and women's teams, have been ridden rock solid by the Nations League seedings now.
But, and just to go back on this, Shane, what I would say is, I would be of the same opinion of you. I don't think Ireland will win either of these games. And if they were to get one draw out of these games, that would be just, well, there's something to build on. But what I'm saying is, in terms of writing off, I do think for Eileen Gleeson and for the Ireland players in these games, to a degree, they have to be able to show that they are able to do something better. Like, Dion Caldwell said that they got results in spite of Vera Pauw.
And I would agree with her.
Yeah, but so what I'm saying is, so now, well, in that instance, if what's there now for them is actually should be more set up for them to thrive in a sense, and not necessarily for these games because they're against two of the better teams in the world, that doesn't mean win, but actually be a bit more competitive. Do you know what I mean? And actually show they have a bit more about them, because they clearly feel that. They clearly feel it themselves. You look at somewhere, some of these, it's similar to the men's team, you look where some of the players play, though, in comparison to where, especially England, where they're playing, they're on a different level. And you say that, and God forbid I say this, but like, Does Katie McCabe get in that England team?
But that, like, that's what I'm saying here is I think Eileen Gleeson, I would back Eileen Gleeson as a coach to have enough about her that she can improve us as a team from what we were under Vera Powell, and that we would be able to get results against teams where we are a slight underdog. You know, playing against a team that are maybe a tier or half a tier above us and ahead of us in the world rankings, and be able to set us up and get us playing in a manner that we're able to go and beat those teams. But these are 3-4 tiers ahead of us. Like, we could play really, really well Friday night and get bet 3-0. We could play really, really well Tuesday night and get bet 3-0. That is the reality. And I just think we're incapable of noticing that we've actually played very well in a match where we potentially have got bet 3-0. Because the gulf in talent is humongous.
That's a fair assessment. That's a bit more understandable than just saying right off, though.
Look, rationally, I can't really disagree. I'm struggling to disagree now with the rationale.
Listen, Shane, Shane, you're fucking right, okay?
That's all I wanted to hear, David. That's all I wanted to hear.
It's a long old trip to Metz, like. I don't want to be going there already writing it off, you know? You're a GA man. It's grand for you. Like, me and David work in football, and when we're not covering the world's worst HR exercise anyone's ever seen, we're covering fucking defeat after defeat here.
I'm attending them as a supporter, so I am. I was at the Belgium game. I will be at the England game. I'm going to try and pull some sort of a stroke to see, can I get Jody up to have a look at one of the training sessions? You know, we're going to live and breathe this in a different manner than ye are, but I also need to deal in reality. And look, again, you know, let's be honest here. Like, you know, it's not that I'm trying to be protectionist is not a word, is it? No. It's not that I'm trying to protect Eileen Gleeson, or that I was trying to protect Stephen Kenny, but, you know, Stephen was somebody that I knew reasonably well on a personal level. Therefore, you were just trying to temper the public's reaction to what was likely to be, you know, some harsh scorelines. And it's the same. I do know Eileen quite well. Myself and Eileen did the same masters together in UCD. I would know Eileen quite well, and I would hate to think that people are going to jump to, you know, conclusions about whether or not she can be successful as an Irish manager based on two games against two of the very, very, very best sides in the world, you know.
Just a couple of final things before Gav does try and sneak into the quick client fast lane in Dublin Airport. What I would say, a couple of things. The one with Stephen Kenny, and we are all guilty of it, and, like, not so much guilty of it, but bought into it a little bit, was, like, he made grander statements about what was expected. That's part of the reason why maybe we were thinking, because again, he said Nations League wanted to top the Nations League group. Do you know what I mean? Like, these are some of the issues that maybe came back. And with Eileen Gleeson, it's a bit different. I don't think she's been as bold as what Stephen Kenny has been saying, but the players have. That's where, from the outside, and as someone who wouldn't cover the women's team all the time, obviously you would cover some of the home games when they're on, as Gas had mentioned about Emma doing it, but, like, there does seem to be that sense that they were looking for more because they felt that there was more for them to give. So that's what you're kind of hoping to see, at least, I would say, from the games. That's what I'm saying. And, like, but again, the title of the podcast is confirmed. You are right there. Ireland, like, but this, and it's similar to what we said with the men's team. Like, Ireland could have, and they did it against France. I'm talking about the men's team here, play really, really well and still lose. Do you know what I mean? Which could happen. I think you'd hold your hands up. That's all you want to see. You want to see them play really, really well. You don't want to just see them maybe playing really defeated football and still getting beaten 6-0 or 4-0.
But it is hard to do enough for people to say that you've played really, really well when you're going to have about a 25% possession.
Well, listen, we'll judge it off the XG at the end of it all and see where we go with it, right? Good to chat, lads. I had a good one. Hope you did too. It was good to be back.
Great stuff, man.
Yeah, it's therapeutic to talk out, especially some of that managerial search, all right?
Yeah, no updates, actually, in the 55 minutes we were recording. No updates on the manager. But hopefully, listeners, there will be when we chat to you next week. So have a good week. Take care.